What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about another loss. It's getting, I don't know how Wizards fans are doing it. It's getting to the point that it's beyond tanking. Like the product is just so poor. The games are, for the most part, when they're not playing teams like Indiana that want to lose more than them. The games are for the most part uncompetitive, and there's not that same excitement factor or level of fun that you might take from some losses at other points in the season. You're not losing while also seeing Alex Sarr get a double-double and 3 to 4 blocks. You're not losing while also seeing Bob Carrington have these breakout games. You're not losing in efforts that you could have won the game, but you just didn't have enough. You're really losing because, number one, obviously, you're without your best players in AD and Trey. Sarr hasn't played. Keyshawn with a knee contusion, missed tonight's game. But you're just the team, the roster, talent-wise, experience-wise, they're so inferior to these opponents that they've been playing. And as a result, the games are not close. I mean, this is 2 games in 3 nights against an Atlanta team that I think is now 1 game under 500. They're fighting for their play-in lives, and they look like a 20 times better team than the Wizards. And they were missing some guys. Nikhil Alexander-Walker out tonight. Jalen Johnson barely played in the first game, was out tonight with an injury, and they still dominated. I mean, they outscored Washington by 51 points across the 2 games tonight. 126 to 96, Atlanta takes the win over Washington. Again, I'm not upset at the result. Like a loss is a loss, whether it's a close competitive loss or a not close blowout loss, like you've seen the last 3 games. But it's getting hard to watch just because you're not really seeing much. It's going to be, I mentioned this, it's not a sprint to the finish line. And I said this at the All-Star break. It's going to be a slow crawl through mud for the Wizards, for their fan base to get to the end of not only this season, but you can sort of see the light out at the end of the tunnel, or at least the light at the end of this rebuilding tunnel. It's been nearly 3 years, 2.5 seasons since they embarked on the journey, and it's you're so close to the end, but you're so far at the same time because these last 20 or so games are going to be some of the hardest watches, some of the toughest games to go through. I think they have 25 games left. Because a lot of guys aren't going to play. We have some injury updates. It's not looking like you're going to see too many of these big name premier guys that would bring you to watch a game for, at least sometime soon. So you don't have that aspect, and it's just the non-competitive losses. Obviously, I'm here to break it down. There's some good to take from it. But tonight, 2 nights ago against Atlanta, 2 of the most, lifeless performances. Again, blowouts by midway point of the second quarter. So obviously I'm going to be here to break it all down. First, I want to start with some injury updates. This is all courtesy of Megan McPeak on Monumental's broadcast. She did a report at the beginning of the game, and she provided some updates on 2 of Washington's premier players that are injured. I don't believe there was an update on Anthony Davis. Again, they said he'd be reevaluated in 2 weeks, I think. And that would be, when maybe he's cleared for basketball activities, still not cleared with that finger issue. But Megan provided an update on Trae Young, who she said is week to week and will ramp up to participate in, I believe, in basketball team activities upon the team's return to DC, which I believe is tomorrow, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure they return home. Toronto on Saturday is their next game. So Friday practice. If they are practicing, I would assume that's maybe when Trae Young takes the next step to start participating and maybe some contact, some definitely basketball-related stuff. He's been shooting. We've seen the pictures and the videos. But I guess that's an intriguing improvement. They're progressing in the right way. But again, with Trae, if he doesn't play, he doesn't play. Like, I think the Wizards would ideally like him to, but as it gets closer to the end, you just got to kind of think, like, well, what's the point? And maybe that's the whole goal with Washington is like, hey, look, we're trying to do it. Like, we're ramping him up. We're being cautious, but we're slowly trying to bring him back. And then with 10 games left, you're like, hey, man, we could bring him back. We're just gonna decide not to. There's no point. We're gonna shut him down for the season. You've seen that all the time. Could it be seen as tanking? Yes, I guess. But I think that might be the approach for Washington to play it by year, but Trey's definitely getting closer to return. Will the Wizards allow him to return? We shall see. And then Megan also provided an update on Alex Saar, who at this point, based on the projections, he would miss the Toronto game. That would be 2 weeks since the day I think they ruled him out for 2 weeks, and then he would return after that. And I even when they gave the 2 week timeline, I thought that was pretty fuzzy timeline. You know, it'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Does not by any means mean he will return in 2 weeks. And I think that was the goal with that language from Washington. Megan McPeak said that Saar is still week to week, and he has not been cleared for team related activities yet, I believe was her report. So again, it seems like Trey being cleared before Saar for team basketball activities, that doesn't say great things about Saar's recovery and his timeline. They're progressing well, but same thing with Saar as Trey. It's like you saw in whatever how many games Saar played this season. You know what you have. He's an unbelievable player. He's just 20 years old. Awesome shot blocker. Really good improvement on offense, efficiency-wise, from the free throw line, from the field, from three. You know you have everything with Saar. You know you have what you have in AD. You know what you have in Trey. And they're being cautious. And will they return? I don't know. But I think those timelines are going to be a little bit more extended than maybe you think. But that's some injury updates, courtesy of the great Megan McPeak from Monumental Sports. Other than that, obviously, Anthony Davis remained out. So did Trae Young. Cam Whitmore out for the season. You also had Keyshawn George, knee contusion, was out for the night. I want to mention, I forgot to mention it on last pod. D'Angelo Russell remains out. They're listing him as not with the team. Will Dawkins said when he gave his presser after the trade deadline that, look, like, D'Angelo Russell's not going to report. You know, we don't expect him to join the team, and we're going to continue to talk with him to try to figure out what's best for us moving forward. To me, that sort of screams like we're going to try to find, you know, a buyout agreement for D'Angelo Russell. And the deadline to do so, I believe, is March 1st, which is in a couple days. So, you know, I would expect something to get done by then. And the deadline, I should say, and clarify, March 1st is the deadline for the Wizards and him to reach a buyout agreement for him to clear waivers and still be eligible to participate in this year's playoffs. They can still buy him out after that, and he can join a team. He just can't play in the playoffs, which where's the merit in that? If you're buying him out, he's giving some money back. I think the goal would be, hey, I'm going to join a contending team. And now maybe that's not the case and no contender wants him, and so there's no rush to do it. Maybe he joins like the Kings at the end of the season. I have no idea. But if he wants to join a playoff contender, which is what happens after most buyouts, you know, coming to a buyout agreement before March 1st is paramount, right? Before that deadline. He is five point, I think he's under a contract for like $5.5 million this year, $5.9 million player option next year. Again, I think it'd probably be best for both sides to find an agreement, but that's the date, March 1st, that they need to come to terms on a buyout there. And then lastly, I want to give a couple updates on some players for the Wiz. Jahmyr Watkins was converted from his two-way contract to a standard NBA deal. Big congrats to Jahmyr there. Really worked hard. I really liked the pick when Washington took him at 43 in this year's draft. Traded back into the second round with the Will Riley trade to get him. But I liked it because he is a solid pick, solid player at both FSU and VCU. Incredible defensive talent on ball, perimeter, even down low, can block some shots. He's a pest on that end. Can pick up full court. He makes his bread on the defensive end. He knows that, and that's always a need, I think, on contending teams. You need someone that's going to buy in and just say, look, this is where I make my money. I can hopefully knock down a three, but let me just settle in and I can get this done. And you've seen him sort of grow with the three ball, be more efficient from there, be more adventurous and sort of taking more looks from the outside with the more playing time he's getting in the last couple of games. So really well-deserved contract. I think based on my math, he's the first Wizards second round pick to earn a second NBA deal since Shelvin Mack in 2011. Some were saying that it's actually Andre Blatch, which if that's the case, and I'm wrong, I don't, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. That's what Spotrac said, it was Shelvin Mack. And if I'm wrong, it makes what Will Dawkins has done even better. So I'm fine being wrong if that's the case, because that means that Will Dawkins is two second round picks in Tristan Vukcevic and in Jahmyr Watkins were both signed to second NBA deals, and none of the GMs for the last 15 plus years could do that, could say that they did that, because they never did realistically. And so that's, praise to him. Obviously, you're not taking any more Isuf Sanans who don't sniff the league. You're not taking any more Aaron Whites who have a fear of flying and don't sniff the league. You're not taking any more Yannick Nzosas who are not even in like top tier Euro leagues and didn't sniff the league. You're not taking any more Cassius Winstons or Admiral Schofields. Like, you're taking no more Isaiah Todds. You're taking like real productive players, and Tristan has a long way to go, and so does John Mir in terms of being a more complete player. But for the team to be willing to give them these deals is obviously speaks volumes to those players and the hard work they put in, but obviously also to Will Dawkins and sort of what he's been able to do drafting wise, because he's been pretty good there. A couple updates monetarily. I mentioned the Tristan contract is through the rest of this season, and then guaranteed in the 26-27 season, and then a team option in that final 27-28 season. Keith Smith, NBA on Twitter, tweeted out some of the contract details for Tristan. He's making $2.8 million for the rest of this season, and then a guaranteed $3 million for the 26-27 season next year, and then the 27-28 season, I believe, is a $3 million team option. Again, Tristan has a long way to go. He's a pretty polarizing player. Some like this deal, some didn't like this deal. I think it's smart to get ahead of it. And even if you have to cut ties, you're not really digging yourself too much of a hole. So that's some of the contract details there regarding Tristan Vukcevic. And then Josh Robbins of The Athletic tweeted out the details of Jahmyr Watkins's contract. He's going to earn $1.131 million for the remainder of this season, and then his 26-27 salary is non-guaranteed team option at 2.1 roughly $1 million. I mean, very interesting structure on that contract as well. It's sort of like one less year, obviously, than Tristan, but you're signing him through the rest of this season on the standard deal, presumably maybe to open up another two-way spot and sign someone else. I've heard that that will be an external signing. It won't be from someone I believe that's currently on the team, but I do know that next year for Jahmyr, as Josh reported, is going to be a non-guaranteed team option. So he's essentially like he's a free agent, but not really. The Wizards can allow him to happen, allow him to go into free agency. The deadline to pick up that option is June 29th, 2026, according to Josh. So again, it's not like it's a big extension for either, and especially for Jahmyr, it's only this season realistically guaranteed at about 1.1 million, and then he's got 2 million for the next season, and then obviously the Wizards can decline that. I think they'd be smart to pick it up, or at least decline it and renegotiate. Obviously, they want him to be here. So does Jahmyr. He wants to be here, and they'll make that happen, obviously. And so, not too concerned, but wanted to make sure Wizards fans were well informed about all of that. And I feel like I have talked a lot so far, and I have yet to really get into the details of the game that I'm supposed to be here recapping. I don't think any of you guys are too upset about it. If you watch this game, shout out to you. I don't know how a lot of you guys are doing. I know I'm doing it because I mean, I don't miss games, but also I have a job to do. Like I have to be well informed on the game in order to, I think, do this pod the way that I think I need to in the right way. For you guys just watching for the love of the game, for the love of the team, man, kudos, because I mean, it's hard. I mean, this team is offering nothing. Going into the games, especially these two in Atlanta, they're not putting forth their best roster. They have a lot of their best players are out injured. You added Keyshawn to that list tonight, and it's just pretty uncompetitive for pretty much 3.5 quarters. Corey Kispert and CJ McCollum were unbelievable. In the first half, they combined for 44 points on 16 of 22 from the field. I mean, that's just insane numbers. Corey opened like 7 of 7 from the field. He finished with a career high 33 points, 11 of 19 from the field, 6 of 11 from 3, plus 26. Good for Corey. Like I bet he had a chip on his shoulder. I'm sure he doesn't blame the Wizards for trading him. Like, I'm sure if you ask Corey, he'd be like, "Look, I get it." But he had a chip, and tonight he was like, "Look, I'm still a really good player, and hopefully, maybe you guys will regret trading me." And so he was really good. Corey Kispert has always been a really good player. Obviously, the defensive end was where a lot of Wizards fans, myself included, sort of gave him some flack, and I think rightfully so for the most part. He's gotten better throughout his career, but he's always been a great shooter. He developed that game to put it on the floor, and shout out to Corey, man. Really, really happy for him to see him thriving in Atlanta. Really good game. And then CJ finished with 25 on 9 of 19 from the field. Again, both of those guys were terrific. That's nearly 50, sorry, nearly 60 points combined between them. Just incredible night for those two. Happy for them against their former team. And I mean, look, a lot of times you trade a guy, they pop off, especially against you, hand you a 30-point loss. The fan base is dejected. They're defeated. They're calling for the GM. They're saying, "Why did we trade these guys? They just destroyed us." Wizards fans were probably rooting for them. And that is, I'm not exaggerating. I know a lot of you were. It's like, look, good for Corey and CJ. If they want to pop off, great. They are a reason that we lost. And so they played well. Happy for them. They made us lose. Happy for us. And in turn, everyone wins. So it's not one of those bitter moments where, the former players pop off against a team that traded them and there's this resentment from the fan base, from those players. All sides. In my opinion, in Wizards fans' opinions, they all sides won tonight. They got exactly what they wanted out of it, and so great for them and great for the Wizards. Obviously, losing, getting another step closer to guaranteeing that they keep their pick. But shout out Corey, man, he was phenomenal tonight. Apart from that, Trey Johnson for the Wizards side, a much better game for him. He did not shoot the ball well, particularly well against Atlanta in that first game. But came back tonight and looked a lot more poised, was a lot more efficient. Just 20 minutes for him. And that's been where he's been at for the last five, six games after coming back from that ankle sprain. 20 minutes, 14 points on 5 of 7 from the field, made both of his threes. There's a couple plays, three plays I want to highlight in particular regarding Trey Johnson. In the beginning of the game, he had Risa Shea switched on him on the baseline, completely shook him out of his shoes. Step backs into the mid-range, drills it from the baseline, really good play, putting it on the deck after he got chased off the three-point line. One, he dunked it, like a big one-handed dunk down the lane. I don't know. I've seen him dunk like two-handed, like not emphatically, but like he came in with the intention of throwing it down. So like sneaky hops from Trey. That was a nice play. It was pretty hype after that. And then there was another one where just a sidestep, I can't speak, a sidestep three on the left wing, just ability to like, you can catch and shoot, but can you put it on the deck, create your own shot? They know you want the three, you can still get it. And that was really nice. Again, made both of his threes, 5 of 7, 14 points in limited minutes. I thought he bounced back particularly well in tonight's game. Will Riley as well, 14 points, 10 boards. It's a double-double for him. I don't know if he's ever had a double-double, but he had one tonight. A little less efficient than you'd like, I guess, with 6 of 17 from the field, but I thought he was unlucky on a couple of those. Just really liked what he did attacking the glass. They played him some minutes at point guard, had 4 assists, 3 turnovers. Again, not the best, but I like some of the dimes that he threw, some drop off passes, some shovel passes. Again, he's just going to keep getting better. My favorite part is he played 36 minutes. Like, if you're going to lose by 30, you need to lose by 30 while your other young guys that are going to be here develop. And Will Riley's developing in these minutes, and I've been, nothing but happy to see that sort of production from him. So those were two guys I highlighted. Champagne again, 14 points in just 20 minutes off the bench. Not the most efficient night, but again, he was still tied for the highest score on Washington. A couple of other things. Bub Carrington struggled once more. 22 minutes, took just 4 shots, only 2 points, 5 boards, 5 assists, just 1 turnover. It's a less it's kind of like half of what he did last night, but it's another type of game where, look, he rebounded well, he passed the ball well, didn't turn it over, but the offense isn't there, the shot generation for him isn't there. He had a mid-range jumper, and that was about all he did. So you want to see him be more aggressive. You want to see him, if you're playing the starting point guard role, be more of a starting point guard. Get your own shots as well. And haven't seen that. He was pretty frustrated tonight. We've seen the frustration sort of grow over the last couple of games. I like it. You're upset. You're getting beat on the court. You're not shooting the ball well. I'm completely fine with Bub showing some of that emotion. You saw it a little bit tonight as well. Apart from that, look, Anthony Gill with the big 11 points on 5 of 8. He can play. You saw Leaky Black. I believe this might have been his first action with the Wiz since signing the two-way contract. 4.7 boards in 30 minutes. I watched the entire game. If you told me Leaky Black played 30 minutes, I would have just looked at you like that is the craziest statement ever. Like, completely transparent, I would have told you he played maybe 10 minutes. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't, maybe I didn't notice him out there, but 30 minutes, I guess, according to the box score. Jaden Hardy, let's talk about it. I told you guys in the beginning, and I've said it probably 3 to 4 times since, he's a microwave scorer. And there's going to be nights where you're like, all right, like I see where people are excited. I see where some people were intrigued after the trade. I get it. And then you also see some nights like tonight where, yes, he had 14 points, but he was a team worst minus 34. He took a team high 19 shots and made just five of them, was 5 of 19 from the field in 28 minutes, 2 of 8 from 3, 0 assists, 3 turnovers. He does not pass the ball. He shoots the ball a lot, takes a lot of threes in volume, not in rhythm sometimes, and he, isn't this world-class defender either. And nights like this, you're kind of like, look, I get it. I get why some people are still a little skeptical of him and what he could bring to the table. Just really inefficient, sort of forced a bunch of shots that I didn't think he should have forced. Turned the ball over a bunch and really doesn't set his teammates up as a guard. He's trying to score. And it's another one where it's like, yeah, when he's on, he's on. It's going to be like, wow, this guy's great. And when he's not, like tonight, you're going to question a lot of what he does, a lot of head-scratching moments for him. So not his finest game, scored a lot. But I still think if you watch the game, you weren't really too interested in what he was doing. Another interesting thing, and we see this all the time, Jahmir Watkins didn't play. DNP coach's decision. We saw it the other day. Jaden Hardy dropped, was it 16 points, I believe, against Charlotte. And then the next game against Atlanta in the first day game, he didn't play. And now we're seeing Jahmir not playing. And I'm sure if Brian keeps asked about it, he'll just say, yeah, man, we wanted to get him some rest. We wanted to get some other players involved and see what they can do. It's the same answer that you're going to get from him. Don't know why you would expect anything different. But no Jahmir Watkins minutes. To my knowledge, he wasn't on the injury report. Didn't seem like he was injured. He was available for the game, just didn't play. So again, very interesting. Not surprising considering the goal of this season and of the last 20 or so games. But no minutes for Jahmir there. But I guess that's sort of what I saw from the game recap. Like the Wizards got dominated pretty early in this one, and that's sort of what happens when you got one team fighting for the play-in in the playoffs and another team that's trying to literally go the opposite direction and stack losses. And that's what you saw tonight. So Wizards fall 126 to 96. They're outscored by 51 points across the two games that they play against Atlanta. They return home now for what's going to start a gauntlet stretch. And that's music, I think, to the ears of the Wizards, because or of the Wizards fans, they play Toronto, they play Houston, both at home, both should be losses, and then at Orlando. Like that's three games right there where if they win any of those games, considering the situation, one team trying to win and they're really good, other team trying to lose, they're really bad, and then all the injuries you factor in for Washington as well. I don't see. I'd be shocked if they won any of those three games. Then you have two, I guess, winnable games, one at home against Utah, one on the road against New Orleans. But I will say, Dejounte Murray and that New Orleans team, they've won two in a row. They're up 20 right now over Utah in Utah in the first of two games against them there. And they are all pushing for a play-in push. Like, that's music to Wizards fans' ears. They have one more win than Washington, I believe. They're about to have two more wins. And, like, they're actively trying their hardest to win games. Like, that's awesome if you're a Wizards fan. If you're the Wizards, because that'll just drive them farther and farther away and drive the Wizards closer and closer to that bottom four record. Then they got to play Miami and then Orlando and then Boston and Golden State, two against Detroit, Oklahoma City, New York. Like that is, it's a really tough stretch, about two winnable games in the span of about 12 to 13 total games. And so obviously, if you're a Wizards fan, in terms of the lottery, in terms of keeping the pick, this is a pretty good stretch for you. Looking at the tank standings, a little bit of an update. While I'm recording this, maybe I'll record it long enough to see what the actual result is. But the Sacramento Kings are currently up 4 with 2 minutes left over the Dallas Mavericks. That would be pretty big because that would mean that the Kings, I believe, will have won two in a row, I think, and then be at 14 wins, which would be just 2 wins separating them and Washington. And even if Dallas wins this game, it's not the worst thing. They only have 21 wins, 5 more than Washington. Again, it just drives them farther away. It's another one of those tanking games that I keep telling Wizards fans will happen, where yes, obviously the Kings win, it's probably better, but but it's a win-win. Either one team gets farther away from Washington or they get closer to the team they need to get closer to. And so obviously I'll try to update that. The Pelicans are up 24 on the Utah Jazz. Again, they're trying to win. Like they're playing all their guys, and obviously Utah is actively trying to lose. So yes, like if they split that, that's probably more ideal. But even if New Orleans wins both games, they're at 19 wins, and they're going to keep trying to win. So the farther they get away, the better. It's another win-win right there. The Pacers were dominated by 24. They are awful. The Nets were dominated by 16. They're really bad. And so obviously you have some games where you can pull some stuff back. And if the Kings win tonight, it's looking pretty good for Washington. And maybe that worst record is still open. But as it stands, the Wizards fall to 16-42. There's two 15-win teams in front of them in Brooklyn and Indiana. If the Kings win, they have 14 wins. If not, they're still at 13. And then when the Pelicans win, they'll be at 18 wins, tied with Utah, and that'll pull the Wizards to a full, I believe, a full game in total, but also two full wins in front, I guess, of the New Orleans Pelicans in the tank standing. So it looked pretty bleak for Washington a little bit after the two wins against Indiana, three blowout losses later, some wins sprinkled in there from tanking teams. It's not looking as bad as it might have. And so that's probably going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Jahmyr Watkins getting that standard contract right alongside Trista Vucevic. Happy for them. The Wizards have one more roster spot open, I believe. And if they waive Russell, they'll have two more spots open. And they also have one more two-way spot to hand out. One's occupied by Sharif Cooper. The other is occupied by Leaky Black. But Washington falls 126-96. They're 16-42. Hopefully the Kings win. If not, Wizards are still in a pretty good position in the tank standing. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. You'll hear from me again on Saturday night when the Wizards probably inevitably lose another game, this one to the Toronto Raptors. Thanks for listening, as always. Go Wiz.